Welcome to the Third and Goal podcast from Neon Tommy Sports, covering the best in West Coast football. I'm James Santelli. I'm alongside Daily Trojan Sports editor, the beardless Mr. Joey Kaufman. Joey, how's it going?
Feels good to be fresh.
Feel all smooth up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also with USC beat writer for Neon Tommy, Mr. Scott Enyard. Scott, how's it going?
It's going good.
Feels good to be beardless as well, I'd say.
So fresh, so clean.
And this week, along with a lack of beards, we're going to be talking about big hits in the NFL, big fake injuries, and big real injuries in the pro game, and also a lot of big conference expansion talks, and for the Pac-12, a lack of conference expansion. We'll also get to our college football picks, along with our game of the century. But first, let's get to the news, and the news this week in the NFL is a hit report from Week 2 hits. Chargers defensive tackle Antonio Gouray fined $15,000 for hitting New England quarterback Tom Brady below the knee. Luckily for Brady, he did have a knee brace on, which could have avoided injury for Brady. Another big hit was Seattle defensive end Raheem Brock hitting Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger low for $15,000. Now, Brock posted to Twitter claiming that he didn't try to hit Roethlisberger below the knees, that he was tripped, and tweeted something to the effect that, "I'd love to have the power to stop myself midair." The biggest hit of the last weekend, though, was for Atlanta Falcons cornerback Dante Robinson, fined $40,000 for what was a pretty big hit on Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver Jeremy Maclin. Like, he went pretty hard into Jeremy Maclin, and some folks even thought that Robinson should have been suspended for that hit. As it stands, he's fined $40,000, and this coming week, another cornerback, Redskins' D'Angelo Hall, says he wants to hit Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo in his ribs. Of course, Tony Romo had some trouble with his ribs last week, that he had some fractured ribs, kept playing in the San Francisco-Dallas game, and ended up winning that in overtime. But D'Angelo Hall said, quote, "I want to get a chance to put my helmet on whatever's hurt." He basically said, "Hey, if it had been Felix Jones having a hurt shoulder, I wouldn't go low on Felix Jones. So I'm going for whatever's hurting with Tony Romo." Do you think, like, is that fine? Is that kosher with you guys?
I don't have a problem with this at all. The fact of the matter is if anybody's ever played football at any level, if the opponent has an injury and you're aware of it, you're going for it. Okay, this isn't some revelation. I mean, maybe he shouldn't have talked about it in the media, but the fact of the matter is that that's what goes on. It's a part of the game. You know it when you sign up for it at any level. And, I missed a game in high school for an ankle injury. I was in a pile the next week that I returned, and someone tried to twist my ankle. You know, it happens. It's any level. It's not unique to the pros. It's not unique to this game. You know, and this isn't some new thing, so I don't have a problem with it at all.
I don't know if that necessarily justifies it. If you have a guy with broken ribs or damaged ribs or bruised ribs, and you have a player on the other team saying, "I'm going to ram my helmet into your," I mean, it's part of the game.
Guess what?
You get a fine.
Block for him, then.
It is a little bit out there to say
it. It seems excessive.
I don't care. Block for him. Don't let.
How about I'm going to hit him, we're going to knock him down, I'm going to rear my helmet into his rib cage.
It's legal.
Technically it is.
Not if he has Dante Robinson.
No, Dante Robinson went head-to-head, helmet-to-helmet. Helmet to ribs.
It's still spearing. It's a penalty.
No, it's not. Ribs is not.
Spearing with your head.
Okay, whatever. Head, shoulder, he's going for his ribs. Helmet is I'm going to put my helmet on his ribs. That's a figure of speech. I don't think he's going to spear the guy. If he spears him, that's a penalty. I don't care. You're going to attack a guy's injury. That's football. We need to stop babying these guys.
Well, somebody
who... And you're a Steelers fan, so you better agree with me, James.
Scott, these are human beings.
You know what? There have been some hard hits for Steelers, even on the offensive side with Hines Ward, but I think it's a case-by-case basis.
Thank you.
Bam. All right, so some babying that went on the field this past week, according to the media, wide-held speculation that Giants defensive back Deion Grant faked an injury during Monday Night Football. And here's the situation. The St. Louis Rams and Sam Bradford were driving down the field with a no-huddle offense at the end of the second half, and the video pretty much shows that Deion Grant just collapsed after a play in the red zone to try to get the Giants a timeout to slow down Sam Bradford's offense. The NFL sent a memo to teams this week saying if they find evidence that teams are faking injuries to get timeouts and delay games, they can fine teams, they can suspend players, they can take away draft picks. So we'll see if that if this kind of faking of injuries goes on after the NFL sends out that stiff message. Scott, you're shaking your head about this.
Well, the problem is I think faking injuries is just as gimmicky as a hurry-up offense to open a game, okay? What's the point of a hurry-up offense?
Try to score
take advantage of a matchup. Not a lot of defense to be able to change personnel to try and tire out a defense. What's the point of faking an injury? To stop the clock, to be able to change your personnel, to slow down the offense. It's a counter move. I don't really care. It's just as gimmicky as what the offense is trying to do. I'm watching refs hurry up to spot the ball and be inconsistent in how they spot the ball for a start of a play to accommodate these hurry-up offenses. How many times have we seen Peyton Manning getting on refs? Hurry up, hurry up. I'm trying to run this hurry-up offense. The NFL needs to instruct their referees to spot at a consistent pace throughout the game for both teams. Hurry-up offense is gimmicky. If a team wants to fake an injury to slow it down and risk taking out a good – because when you fake an injury, you got to come out of the game. You don't get to stay in the game.
Yeah, but Deion Grant's not really like Marcus Allen.
I don't care if he's Santa Claus. The point is that if you want to have a player come out of the game, that's at your own risk. It's your own prerogative. It doesn't matter. It's a counter move. It's a chess game. You fake injuries.
Here's where I have a problem with it. It's hypocritical. We've seen a movement recently in the NFL to curtail nasty hits, helmet to helmets, more injury awareness with concussions, with everything. And now you're taking advantage of that increased awareness by using that as an advantage.
Have you ever had a cramp? You play basketball. Do you ever have a cramp? You have. Okay. The point is now the NFL wants to be in a position, regardless of what you think about faking injuries, now the NFL wants to put themselves in a position where – look, I may be down with what looks like an injury, but it is just a cramp. You know, what's this? They don't know if a guy's cramping. What are you going to freaking x-ray him on the field?
It's one thing to take away draft picks to suspend players to fine. That's a whole separate issue. But I'm talking about as a strategic move to fake an injury is betraying a certain trust level the NFL has given the referees and given the idea of we're going to look after players. And now you're saying – that's why I have a problem with it. Is we've seen a greater effort to help these guys out, and on the converse,
but we're helping the offense out, not the defense. This is the defense finally trying to get a little love. This freaking league has done everything with rules to benefit the offense, increase scoring. You can't touch quarterbacks. You can only have contact with receivers 5 yards. They've done everything for the offense. I don't have a problem with throwing the defensive bone. If they want to fake an injury, let them fake an injury.
Look, here's my problem. There are all these faking of injuries in soccer, and people hate that part of the game.
But it is part of the game. That's the point.
It's legal as a part of the game, but everybody hates that part of the game.
You're faking an injury. Just think about that.
I don't care. I don't like it in soccer, though, so maybe. But like I said, I'll give you that concession. If you want to concede the ethics of faking injury, that's fine. The question about the rule, the NFL, how can someone be the
judge? Well, it's hard to prove that, and the idea of Lord Goodell is, I'm going to take away a draft pick.
Goddell.
is, I think, a little silly.
It's a little easy.
Yeah.
And it's, again, there's too much leeway, there's too much wiggle room for a team to, well, was he really hurt? No, he could have set it up, so we're going to take away the first round pick. Like,
yeah.
That's a stretch.
All right, moving off the field and into the college game, actually, with more of this conference expansion talk. And it seemed to have cost one man his job, with Big 12 Conference Commissioner Dan Beebe apparently working on resigning from his position. According to reports, Oklahoma would only stay in the Big 12 if Beebe was not around and if Texas's Longhorn Network was better regulated. In another conference, according to CBS Sports' Brett McMurphy, the SEC denied membership to West Virginia University, John Denver and all, and looks to be on its way to accepting Missouri, which would pave the way for a 14-team SEC conference with Missouri and with Texas A&M. And guys, that leads our way into our first design feature topic, which was the Pac-12 coming out this week with Commissioner Larry Scott saying that the conference is not interested in expanding. This came from some wide speculation earlier on in the week that Texas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State were pretty much on their way in to make it a Pac-16. But for now, the Pac-12 is staying the Pac-12. Do you think it was the right move for Larry Scott?
I think it has to be the right move. I don't see how you say it's the wrong move. For starters, just based on Larry Scott's part, Texas refused to give up first, second-tier rights. They refused to give up the Longhorn Network. So you're not going to be able to move Texas into the conference, in a 16-team super conference, under your current equal revenue sharing regional network system, which works incredibly well in terms of the revenue it's going to produce. And I believe Darren Revelle tweeted this late Thursday night, or Tuesday night, excuse me. They would have had to made an additional $1.8 billion.
In order to divide the pie up 16
ways. To make what they're currently making now in the 12-team split.
Right. So it's quite a challenge, and based on the obstacle of Texas refusing to do equal revenue sharing, I don't see how you can raise that extra $1.8 billion and divide it evenly. I think it's a good system for the 12 teams you have now. I think adding the four would have taken more money away from Larry Scott. I don't see how 16 would have worked.
Well, there's so many layers to this story. There's the academic side of it with –
I'm just talking money right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, I know. You're dead on with the money, so I don't need to repeat that because I think we're in agreement there. The Pac-12, as it stands currently, has 8 AAU schools to 4 AAU schools. It's a pretty strong ratio. There's only, I think, 68 AAU schools in the country. For those who don't know, it's the American Association of American Universities. And
sounds about right.
it's either Association of American Universities or American Association Universities. Anyways, the point is that if you would add the four teams that we're talking about adding, you gain three non-members and one member for a 9-7 ratio, okay? That's not a ratio that any Pac-12 president would have wanted to be a part of. I don't think it ever got to that point because I don't think Larry Scott ever presented
They never ended up voting.
Well, they didn't have to vote. I don't even think there was really even that close to a vote. And there was something specific in the wording of Larry Scott's statement where he talked about people, essentially teams reaching out to him with proposals to expand. It wasn't like they were extending invitations. He was hearing what they had to say.
Larry Scott's talked to us before the USC-Utah game up at the Coliseum in the press box. And what he said was, this is a different situation than it was last year. It is the Big 12 being in dysfunction, the Big 12 reaching out to the Pac-12.
Right.
It wasn't as if Larry Scott was being proactive and looking to expand. They liked the TV deal they had. They liked the 12-team setup. They were very comfortable with that. And if a situation presented itself as if the Big 12 imploded and they needed to stabilize for the next 10 years, I think they would have snatched up those schools. But there was no imminent need for Larry Scott.
No, especially after the SEC came out and said that they would be stopping at 14. So now all of a sudden, I think SEC is the leader. If they say we're not going 16, nobody else is. Whatever SEC does.
Well, I slightly disagree with you there because does Oklahoma want to go to the SEC?
Well, I think if they have the opportunity to, they would.
So the Pac-12 almost has a de facto, we're going to annex Texas, Oklahoma. When the SEC decides it wants to go to 16.
Absolutely. But my point is as long as the SEC doesn't go to 16, I don't think
anybody – it will never be a pressing
need. Yeah, I don't think anybody goes to 16. My question for you is this, though. The Pac-12 – or I'm sorry, Oklahoma kind of began the PR spin yesterday saying, well, we were just trying to leverage the Pac-12 to get Texas to make some concessions. Do you think that's just spin so they don't look like they had egg on their face?
I think that's part spin, but I believe John Wilner of San Jose Mercury News tweeted the other night. One source did confirm that report. So the idea that Oklahoma was using Pac-12 as leverage, there's probably an element of truth in that.
Well, I think
whether it was all leverage, no, I don't think it was.
I think if they would have gotten an extended invitation based on that, I don't think there's any way that they would have turned it down, leverage or not.
I think basically, and somebody may have tweeted this earlier this week, if you have to say that you have leverage, you probably don't have leverage.
The best analogy, because there was a lot of
– It wasn't as if Darren Boren released a statement and said we were using this as leverage. No, it was a source. It was a report. I don't think the idea that Oklahoma was using this in part as leverage is ridiculous at all.
Well, and then the people that say that the Pac-12 thought that they were going to be able to strong-arm Texas into – giving up their network and this and that. I don't know if it was Dennis Dodd or who it was. It was someone from the Daily.
I'm still surprised that it was probably Dan Wilkin. Yeah. I'm still surprised that Texas and the ACC didn't get more traction. That lost a little bit of steam because I thought that was a serious.
We've both come out and said that we were against expansion in an earlier podcast. I see this as a victory for us. I feel like the people really embraced what we had to say, all of our listeners.
Yeah.
I think Larry Scott proved that he listens to the Third and Goal podcast by this decision.
I say I oppose the expansion. I pulled the Super Conference as a fan of college. Sure. I like the regional grouping. I like the 12, and I like the idea of having six BCS conferences, eventually having some sort of playoff as a personal level. I don't think we're maybe – I think eventually we're going to have super conferences.
We're not done with conference expansion. No. Because the Big East will need to get teams to replace mm-hmm. Syracuse and Pitt when they leave to meet the NCAA's definition of an FBS conference.
Well, let me just add one. East Carolina applied for membership.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're going to need – they will need at least one more team. So, but I don't think East Carolina gets that membership. So – you know, there's rumor that they were reached out to Air Force,
Air Force, Navy, and Army.
You know, so
I think Navy. Would
we're be not a good done, fit. But should the Air Force, Navy? I think Navy would be a great fit as well. Should one of the academies, particularly Army and Navy, who are independent, should they join the Big East? Great. If another domino falls and happens to be a member from another conference,
I'm surprised they haven't looked. Or Central Florida hasn't gained more talk.
It would be a natural because rival for South Florida.
It would be a natural. You get another team in Florida. You have a program which under George O'Leary has been very successful in recent years. You have an Orlando TV market, which is fine. So I don't understand why that is not been discussed.
Well, something to keep an eye on. If they deny East Carolina, obviously that door is still going to stay open. And
but why wouldn't the Big East reach out to Central Florida? Because that seems to me much more attractive than any of the service academies.
Well, Jim Boeheim seems to really want to have a voice, so maybe he's saying not to. Maybe they don't want him for basketball.
Topic of widespread discussion in the college game was Tyler Branch's recent article in The Atlantic in which he kind of takes his cuts at college sports and the NCAA. He's a well-known like social writer about
Pulitzer Prize winning
racial issues.
What about the civil rights?
And so he kind of comes at it from that angle. And Joey, you seem to have some, you know, big things to say about Branch's article and about the reaction to it. You think he's getting too much credit for what he's written?
I think I think it was well done, well reported, well written, everything. Great piece all in all. The problem I have with it, as Seth Davis, Sports Illustrated, wrote a rebuttal yesterday to the Branch story, was he said, my problems are twofold. One, he operated under the assumption that college players earn nothing. That's a faulty premise. They get scholarship money. They get meals. They get airfare.
Clothes. You ever sit in a class with an athlete? Guess what they're wearing? Their school's football gear.
And if you want to make the case that they're underpaid, they're not getting their value on a fair market, you have a better argument there. But Branch argued that they get nothing and that they're almost akin to slavery. And I have a problem with that because they are getting some benefits from being – they aren't
– they had lobster for dinner last night.
They aren't unpaid laborers. They are maybe undervalued.
Right.
That's a separate issue. The second part I have is he talked about, as Seth Davis pointed out, how much these conferences, these schools are earning. The SEC got $1 billion in TV rights deal. But it doesn't account for how much – the schools are paying for these programs and how many of these schools operate in the black. It's not expensive to have a football program. It's not expensive to fly the USC football team to South Bend and stay at a downtown Chicago hotel with 150 players and staffers. To do everything is expensive. And as Davis pointed out, most schools are in the black, and therefore to just say, we'll pay players. How do they have the money to do that?
Right. And, you know, Branch's article had great points. The problem is it did a poor job of looking at the counterargument, and it had some misconceptions that he treated as truths. That's not to take away from the points that he did make. The problem is when you have the discussion of paying players, when you have the discussion of, you know, the athletic departments making so much money off of these guys, like they're some kind of victim, you know, that's what Davis pointed out, and that's what I think that – you know, is not getting nearly enough attention as the original piece by Branch, because Davis's counterargument was really well written. And, you know, the fact remains is these football programs and the money that being made off athletes does in a large part sustain everything that's going on. There's not a lot of money being spent in excess, and I think that's a large misunderstanding. Could you find a way to give the players more? Well, they're talking about full cost of attendance. Pat Hayden, USC's athletic director, has been a pretty strong proponent of finding a way to get more money in these guys' pockets, you know, to get food, not tattoos. And
basically, his argument being that Los Angeles, it's a higher cost of living than, say, it's not Columbia,
Lawrence,
Missouri.
Yeah, it's not Lawrence, Kansas, okay? And that's not a knock on any city. It's just some places it's more expensive to live. So, you know, hopefully that these two articles can lead to some reform in some way. But they need to be looked at together and not just Branch's piece as this exceptional piece of journalism with all these great truths, because it does have some faulty premises. It does have some misinformation. Seth Davis responds to that. So let's look at them together and hopefully it can create some reform.
Again, they're both great pieces, not to say away. But I think one point that nobody I would like to see discussed more is you can make a case a guy like Matt Barkley getting his scholarship, say it's worth $50,000 a year, and Will Andrew, who's now on scholarship, $50,000 a year, that's not an equal for the amount of money Matt Barkley could potentially bring to the university, selling the jersey in the bookstore. Why isn't Matt Barkley compensated for the selling of the jersey? But the problem is they use that money Barkley has for his jersey to pay for Andrew's scholarship. They use it to fund their new women's lacrosse program. And if you want to make a point that's saying the problem is the money for football has becomes the money for the entire athletic department – theoretically, why should football have to share its revenue with other departments?
Well, and beyond that,
why should the football team, which sells 70,000 at the Coliseum, have to be responsible for funding the rest of the athletic department? Well, that is an issue which nobody has raised, and I would like to see that maybe
be
part of the discourse.
But even beyond that, you're talking about a player who's going to go to the NFL, whose brand has already been built for free. He didn't have to buy a PR firm. He didn't have to invest his own money. He didn't have to do anything. And he's going to be able to get a lucrative – beyond his play, he's going to get drafted by a team and be an instant star.
And it goes back to when Reggie Bush left USC a star because of all the self-promotion he did with USC. He signed a
– he benefited.
He bought like
that.
I think it was roughly $5 million. I want to say $5 million a year endorsement deal with Adidas. If you're Zach
before
Lee –
before
he
got drafted.
Before he ever played down the NFL. If you're Zach Lee, a pitching prospect who signs with the Dodgers and is playing the AAA for 2 years – he's not going to get an endorsement deal like that.
Right. So these players aren't victims. I refuse to ever give in to that because Reggie Bush, it's a great example of these guys, and even basketball, these guys get shoe contracts before they ever hit the floor in the NBA, before they ever hit the field in the NFL. They're making money off of endorsement deals, and the reason that they can get those endorsement deals, the reason that Cam Newton was an Under Armour icon this offseason, as he called himself, is because of the star that was built for him. Now, if people think that that's being taken advantage of, then let's pull the plug on that and let's see what endorsement he gets without any of the exposure.
You need to readjust the phrasing. And when you throw out terms like victim, taking advantage of, unpaid laborers,
right,
sweatshops, those are terms which imply that these players receive no benefits whatsoever. And I think that is a faulty premise. I think they do have some advantages. I think it's a totally different can of worms to argue and saying they deserve more, which I think is certainly valid, 100%.
Anyway, let's move on to the program. And that was a very good discussion, guys. But our last featured topic is going to be in the NFL and the so-called injury epidemic that is going on. And I kind of shake my head at that a little bit. I personally don't think there's not a huge outlier of injuries, but there have been a good number of injuries, including guys being out for the year like 49ers wide receiver Braylon Edwards or safety Eric Berry. There's also some injuries to high-profile running backs like Chris Johnson and Arian Foster. Scott, you had talked about this a little bit before the show. Do you think it can be attributed to the lockout? And do you think it is an epidemic?
I think that's a general consensus right now. And, you know, I mean, looking at the number of injuries 2 weeks in, I do think it's an epidemic. I think it's far more than normal. I don't think Braylon Edwards is actually out for the season. I think he's out for at least a couple weeks, though. But, you know, the rest of them, Eric Berry's out for the year. You know, Sidney Rice in Seattle is got a torn labrum. Robert Gallery's got a groin injury. I mean, there's a number of injuries, you know, throughout, and it's because these guys didn't get a chance to train with their teams during the lockout. You know, again, that's the general consensus. I think that, you know, I guess you can't say for sure if it's a lockout, but the fact remains you've got a number of players who are star players seemingly falling victim to more injuries, and you have an undeniable fact that they weren't able to train, go through OTAs, go through, you know, mini camps, work with their strength staff, you know, and it's do those two things work together?
I think it has to be. Your off-season regimen was cut short. You did less training in the off-season. You did less conditioning. They didn't train with the team in the facility, so I think they have more injuries is certainly more than valid.
I don't know that there's any way you can correct it. That's the only problem. I mean, it's a fascinating story in a lot of ways because it's killing my fantasy team.
It's fascinating for Scott anyway. Yes.
And many other fantasy teams out there. But, you know, the fact is that what can you really do? What's done is done. Hopefully these guys are working hard now. They're taking precautions. They're taking care of themselves. And, you know, hopefully they'll be all right.
To the college game, and especially in the Pac-12, where a couple of the coaches could be on the hot seat at their respective schools.
Could be?
They're on the hot seat.
Rick Neuheisel was
the only one that's a could is Mike Riley. The rest of them, they're sitting on
the
Let me
introduce
holes.
The topic, guys. Okay, Rick Neuheisel is definitely on the hot seat.
I'm excited about this one.
Mike Riley at Oregon State, almost certainly on the hot seat. Mike Stoops, Dennis Erickson down at Arizona and Arizona State. Do you think those guys are really on the hot seat, or could they be getting there?
I think they're definitely on the hot seat. With Dennis Erickson, I believe his contract does not extend past this year, and he's going to need a renewal to keep his job. Mike Stoops has a fan base that's never been to a Rose Bowl and is growing impatient with a potential first-round pick at quarterback. They're struggling. I know that there's a lot of discontent. In fact, mathematically, if you look at how the numbers really break down, the conference could actually lose even more coaches. I don't think they're on the hot seat. Chip Kelly's got NCAA trouble. He could
Paul Wolf at Washington State.
And Paul Wolf at Washington State. I mean, the conference could
lose Tedford.
The conference could lose half or seven of its coaches this offseason, in theory, and that's not even unreasonable. I think at least four, and I think the four that we talked about. I disagree that Mike Riley is on the hot seat. I think people are getting impatient, especially after Sacramento State loss. However, I disagree. I think that's unreasonable by their fan base. You got to remember how bad Oregon State was before Mike Riley ever got there. Even when Dennis Erickson managed to get them to a Fiesta Bowl, that was after Riley built that program, went to the Chargers, and there's nobody that disputes that those were Riley's players. They've always started slow. It's unfortunate they lost to Sacramento State, but there's not a better guy in the sport. There's not a better guy to coach. I would, if I had to send my kid to any school in the conference based on coach, he's going to Oregon State and playing for Mike Riley.
Jody, do you think Riley's safe right now?
I think he's safe because we're getting – he had the injuries with Jaquizz and James last year. I think this is Sacramento State loss. I think he's got at least another year. But what I find most curious about is the Pac-12 coaches on the hot seat is the Mike Stoops situation in Arizona, because it reminds me a lot of Minnesota getting rid of Glenn Mason in the last decade. You have a coach who, before Stoops got there, Arizona was pretty much irrelevant under Makovich. And now Stoops comes in, they struggle, they go 3-8, 5-7. And then 2008, they go 8-5. 2009, they go 8-5. And they go to three straight bowl games. And now fans are almost discontent with going 8-5, and it comes down to
know your role.
It's all right. Stuart Mandel calls it Ole Miss Clemson syndrome, where its fans think 1 or 2 years is reflective upon the 100-year history of the program. I guess Arizona fans, back to the Desert Swarm days, that is reflective on their history. You look at UCLA under Neuheisel; they had the success in the late 80s.
The last time UCLA won a Rose Bowl, I think, is 85, which means TCU has won more Rose Bowls in the last 25 years than UCLA has.
But the point being is you have to know your role, because if Arizona fires Mike Stoops, who do you bring in? Are you going to get somebody who's going to go 8-5 like
Stoops?
You're
going to get another Mike. His name's Mike Leach. And that's
you think
why,
Arizona's going to swing their sword?
No, listen to me. That's why these guys are on the hot seat, though, because there's a number of good coaches out on the market, so to speak, that – people want to have a shot at. With a guy like Mike Leach sitting there, who's got ties to this part of the country, grew up in Wyoming.
Went to Pepperdine Law School.
Went to Pepperdine out in L.A. for law school. So he's a West Coast, West Region guy. Okay? And you've got a school like Washington State, who that's totally his neck of the woods that he grew up in. You've got a school like UCLA. He's from, you know, went to law school in the region. You've got a school like Arizona, where he would, you know, the offense that he runs, essentially the talent's already there. He could pick up right where Stoops left off.
The problem Stoops has is he lost his brother Mark to Florida State, and he lost Sonny Dykes, who was his offensive coordinator, 08-09. and losing both last year.
Came from Texas Tech under Leach.
Both ended up going. They had those two 8-5 years last year. Was a big drop off despite having Foles. So I think Stoops is losing steam. But remember, Arizona fans, where were you before Mike Stoops? I'm not saying they shouldn't fire Stoops, but be careful what you wish for.
Do you think the UCLA Oregon State game this weekend, loser loses? It's like old school WWF.
Well, let's jump to those Pac-12 picks right now and go to that UCLA Oregon State game going into Corvallis. Is it loser loses his job right now?
Well, yes, because UCLA is going to lose that game. So, absolutely. James Rogers is back. Aliuli is back on defense. Oregon State's getting healthy. They're coming off a bye, more time to prepare. A little unstable at quarterback, but not any more unstable than UCLA is. And UCLA's got the same problem USC does. These, for whatever reason, the last decade, if you're from LA and you try to go up to the state of Oregon, you can't win a football game.
Scott's picking the Beavers. Joey, who do you got?
Beavers in a game which is going to be ugly. They're going to be turnovers, interceptions. I take Oregon State not to lose.
What a ringing endorsement for Oregon
State. Not to lose. Oregon State will not lose.
And now the game in Tucson, that could potentially save Mike Stoops' job if he can upset number 10 Oregon. The Ducks going into Arizona right now. Guys, do you think the Wildcats can pull off the upset?
Well, first of all, you're right. If he wins that, he saves his job regardless of what happens this year.
I think so.
So I agree with that. The problem is I don't see that happening. Oregon seems to be hitting after a huge marquee win over Southeast Missouri State.
The rest of the conference is shuddering in fear.
And another big blowout of Nevada.
Yeah.
Huge out-of-conference schedule. All seriousness aside, this game's going to be a game that features no defense and a lot of points. Problem is I think that Oregon's going to score a majority of the points.
They do score a lot of points.
I believe Oregon-Arizona kick off at around 7 Pacific, and I think USC-Arizona State is going
to
kick off
they're back
7 Pacific.
Yeah,
so I'm curious to see which game is going to end.
Which game ends first?
Does either of those games end before midnight?
All right, let's go to up to Seattle where undefeated Cal goes into Husky Stadium to take on Washington in this Pac-12 North battle. Cal versus Washington, who you got?
Well, both teams have been impressive, relatively. I thought that the Huskies did a good job holding their own in Lincoln last week. I do bark for Sark.
As you do every week.
I do every week. No, I didn't pick them to win last week.
But you still bark. You still bark for Sark.
I bark like Arsenio Hall.
His catchphrase.
In the early 90s. But I'm going to pick the Huskies. Keith Price is playing good. I don't have anything that I really love about Cal. And Washington's a tough place to play. They could score some points. It's kind of like the Arizona-Oregon game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of defense played. And that being said, I think Washington has the better offense.
Joey, do you think Cal stays undefeated here?
I'm taking Washington. I'm taking Washington for four reasons. One, I like Snobitry. Two, I like Stern Gating. Three, I like Keith Price. I think he's an underrated quarterback. Four, I don't bark for Sark.
That's not
but right. I am partial to Sarkisian. I'm taking the Huskies.
See, I thought you were going to stay with that S alliteration after the first two things.
Anyway. Keep me on your toes, James.
As well you should. And finally, the Pac-12 game of the week, pretty much, is USC going into Tempe to take on Arizona State. USC looking to you're already putting up the fight on, Joey. Do you think USC wins on the road here?
I'm taking USC in a barn burner.
How many barns will we burn, Joey? Do you think this game goes past midnight, starting at 7:15 on the West Coast?
I'm saying it ends before midnight, but I like where USC is at as a football team. I think I trust USC to make fewer mistakes. I think somebody alluded to the stat earlier. USC and Arizona State both rank in the top 20 penalized teams in the country. And I think in a close game, you're going to look for a team to make fewer mistakes. And I think USC is a team that will – I trust Barkley more in the fourth quarter than I do Brock Osweiler. I trust Barkley and the USC's offensive unit to have fewer dumb penalties, fewer personal foul calls. I like USC because they play a smarter – more conservative game than Arizona State.
The Trojans did play a very complete game last week against Syracuse. Scott, do you think they go 4-0?
Man, I don't know. This is one game that I've gone back and forth on. Arizona State's favored. SC seems to be playing good. This is going to be the best defense SC faced, regardless of thus far at this point. They're more athletic than anything Syracuse brought to the table, anything Utah brought to the table, anything Minnesota brought to the table. They're a little bit banged up, but they've done a good job, and there's not been a whole lot of drop-off. Arizona State at night is a pretty crazy place to play. First road game, a lot of young key players for the Trojans. I want to have faith.
What is it, man? Come on. Who are you picking?
I'm giving them a shot. It's like Vegas. I'm letting it ride. Okay. I doubted them against Utah. They proved me wrong.
They did.
I went with them last week. They played complete. I'm going to let it ride. I'm going to give them another shot to keep proving me wrong. Show me that they're an elite team. I'm going to take SC to beat Arizona State.
Homerism reigns supreme on the Third and Gold podcast.
You totally baited me into that just to call me a homer.
Pretty much, yeah.
Objective homerism, James.
Fine. You know, I'm perfectly fine with both picking USC.
Well, who are you picking, James?
I think it's going to be a close game. I'm going to pick USC as well. I'm not above this kind of objective homerism as well. Before we get to the game of the century, let's go down to Texas in another big game between two top 10 schools as the Oklahoma State Cowboys head into College Station to take on Texas A&M. The winner of this game could remain undefeated and launch themselves into the top 5 with a victory. Oklahoma State, Texas A&M, what's your pick?
Well, even though it is in College Station, I've been more impressed with what Oklahoma State's done as of late than I have been with what Texas A&M has done. I thought the Oklahoma State game in Stillwater against Arizona seemed to be pretty dominant. I'm going to go ahead and go with Oklahoma State. I don't know if it's an upset because I don't know who's favorite compared to the rankings.
Probably A&M.
So that's very unprofessional by my part. But I'm going to call it an upset because I think anytime you win in College Station against a top 10 team, it's an upset. I'm going to go with the upset on the road, Oklahoma State.
Joey, are you staying with Oklahoma State? Are you picking the home team?
Saying great minds think alike. I also like Oklahoma State. I like David Wheaton because he's pushing 40. He's got the experience. I think they're a complete team. They've played till 3 a.m. in the morning. I like Oklahoma State. Just...
That's another 3 a.m. game for you. You're projecting. All right. Let's not go any further. Let's end it here with this week's Game of the Century. And this week, the Game of the Century heads into the highlands of Morgantown, West Virginia. Lovely Morgantown, West Virginia. I'm just
country roads.
I couldn't hate any place on this earth more than Morgantown, West Virginia. I'm not even going to take a sniff at journalistic objectivity.
Are you a Pittsburgh fan?
I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but yeah, I tend to be an aficionado.
He hails from the Three Rivers.
And one of the rivers, probably the worst river, the Monongahela, rolls through Morgantown.
Oh my gosh.
You know what else is rolling through Morgantown this week? The LSU Tigers. The number 2 team in the country goes into West Virginia. 2 top 25 teams at the primetime game on ABC with WVU trying to remain undefeated and get their signature win against the LSU Tigers. Can West Virginia take it, or does LSU stay
on top? I want to pick West Virginia just to piss you off.
And it would. It would certainly do that.
Unfortunately, Oliver Luck is their AD. Andrew Luck is not their quarterback. They do not beat LSU. LSU with the win.
Scott?
Close.
I think LSU wins. I think it's closer than the expert. I'm doing a course, so closer than the experts think.
Grab that pen. Shake it at the camera.
I like LSU by a touchdown. I think Jarrett Lee's played fairly well thus far. He's been efficient. I think that defense will be too much for Dana Holgorsen and company. I'm taking the LSU Tigers.
You guys are
the best team in the country as of right now.
You guys are wonderful men. I've never been happier to be a part of the Third and Goal podcast.
The Ravens are still winning the Super Bowl.
Than right now. And now I hate you again. So those are our picks. Have fun watching this weekend's game. We certainly will. And for the best in West Coast football, follow us on Twitter at @neon_sports or follow us at our website, Neon Tommy Sports. Find us at neontommy.com/sports. Enjoy the games, everyone.